Hello and welcome to Volume 44, number 22 of your weekly local news magazine, Grapevine. Brought to you by the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association, this edition is published on Friday the 31st of May 2024. Hi, I'm Graham, your presenter, joined this week by newsreaders Andrew and Alison. And in this week's issue, the promised galleon has arrived, Martha's rule is to be put in place at the JPUH, and an end to the long story of the A47 upgrades. In addition, Alison looks at our local village names and Andrew celebrates the D-Day anniversary. All this coming your way during the next hour or so, but first, the birthdays. Well, there's been a dearth of Grapevine birthday celebrations recently, but this week we have the pleasure of wishing very best wishes to Tim Poole, celebrating this coming Thursday. Have a great day, Tim. Okay, it's over to Andrew.
Hello everyone, welcome to Grapevine in these last days of May. Hopefully June will bring us some welcome sunshine. I'm delighted to say that I'm joined again by Alison. Alison, would you like to start us off?
Hello everyone. The galleon Andalusia's arrival is delayed. The arrival of a replica Spanish galleon, which we reported last week, that was set to dock in Great Yarmouth Harbour, was delayed due to weather conditions. The galleon Andalusia's was scheduled to arrive at the South Quay for its opening ceremony on Tuesday, May the 28th at 10 a.m. It actually arrived at 8 p.m, firing two shots from its cannon as it approached Goulston Pier. Coinciding with half term, the ship was set to be open to the public between May 28th and June 9th. This will still go ahead from the 29th of May. Constructed by the Nao Victoria Foundation in Spain, Galleon Andalusia was launched in 2009 and has covered 70,000 nautical miles. It is 162 feet long and 33 feet wide, with 10 cast iron cannons on each side, and its seven sails have a surface area of almost 1,000 square metres. Ruth Cockrell, Great Yarmouth Borough Council's marketing events officer, said, "The visit promises to offer a fascinating day out for people of all ages. She's a truly incredible ship and we can't wait for her arrival. It promises to be a stunning spectacle for people to enjoy on South Quay."
A Norfolk arcade has been recognised as one of the most popular in the UK. A study by Vegas Slots Online found the Merivale Old Penny Arcade in Great Yarmouth to be the 10th most popular in the UK. The Old Penny Arcade can be found at the Merivale Model Village and contains a selection of vintage amusement machines which have been curated and restored by Peter Williamson. Visitors can also purchase old penny tokens to add to the nostalgia of the experience. The arcade ranking is based on a number of factors such as Google reviews and search volumes, walking distance from public transport, average enjoyment score, and the average time spent inside. Merivale has an average Google review score of 4.7 out of 5. And is only 1.4 miles from a train station and has an average enjoyment score of 6.36 out of 10. Arcade Club Leeds topped the list as the UK's number one, followed by Arcade Club Bury in Manchester and the Brighton Pier Arcade.
A Norfolk boat firm will soon embark on a new venture that marks a radical change in direction for the business. Richardson's, one of the biggest companies offering boating holidays in the Broads, has been granted permission to create a yoga studio in a yurt at the side of a holiday let it currently operates. It will create the canvas-covered space at Stave Marsh House in Stalham, accompanied with treatment rooms and a new balcony. Broads Authority Planning Committee members approved the bid unanimously, although concerns were raised about parking. It follows Norfolk County Council, which is responsible for highways, worrying the development could lead to an increase in on-street parking. The Museum of the Broads, located nearby, also wrote a letter highlighting this issue. However, it was agreed that the adjoining Richardson site, where its marina and cafe is located, would be able to provide parking spaces to resolve this issue. In addition, officers said placing conditions to stop on-street parking would be unenforceable. While permission was granted for the yurt, the Broads Authority has ordered that it cannot be used for any other purpose other than yoga, and that no music can be played. However, it is not clear if the restriction on music would mean yogis would be unable to join in a chorus of Oms, an ancient mantra that represents the beginning of creation, which forms an integral part of some yoga practices, or if this applies to music used to guide meditation sessions. Speaking in support of the plans, Tim Jekyll said, "This is a perfectly sensible thing to do and fits in with the other properties in the area." Bill Dixon added, "It is admirable that Richardson's is investing in this old building, and they should be commended for improving the area. The yoga venture comes as Richardson's hopes to modernise its marina in Stalham, which it hopes will become a destination in the county."
A Great Yarmouth workwear company has been praised by the Shadow Business Secretary as an example of a thriving export firm. Jonathan Reynolds and Labour's parliamentary candidate, Keir Cousins, visited Yarmouth Oilskins on Southgates Road on Tuesday, May the 28th. As he praised the company's success in Japan and America, the Shadow Business Secretary said independent businesses would receive support in Labour's plans to rejuvenate the British economy. The duo toured the premises and discovered more about the company, which has been making workwear in the town for more than 125 years. Mr. Reynolds praised the company's international output and said Labour's industrial strategy will focus on being better, more stable and more consistent for businesses and workers. "The economy has not grown over the past 14 years as anyone would like it to grow," he said. "There's been low business investment, low productivity and low growth as a result. And Labour's menu of things that makes life easier for business is about security first of all." Mr. Reynolds said if his party is successful at the July the 4th election, a new industrial strategy will be launched as soon as possible, with a focus on apprenticeship levies, secure work for people and a good faith relationship with the European Union for, quote, specific things. "Life has been made more difficult for people in terms of exporting to the EU after Brexit," he said. "And there are some things we can do to make that easier, but there are some facts of life around that." Trying on one of the company's coats, Mr. Reynolds praised Yarmouth Oilskins' approach to exports, whose EU trade has fallen since Brexit, but sales have risen with customers in the US and Japan. After their tour of Yarmouth Oilskins, Mr. Reynolds and Mr. Cousins plan to visit Haven Holiday Park in Yarmouth and a business in Beccles.
A new rule giving patients and their families a louder voice has been hailed as a potential game changer after being adopted by all of Norfolk's main hospitals. The Norfolk and Norwich University Hospital, the Queen Elizabeth in King's Lynn, and the James Paget in Galston have all been included in the initial rollout of Martha's Rule. Named after Martha Mills, a 13-year-old girl from South London who died of sepsis in 2021, the rule allows patients, families and carers to request an urgent, independent second opinion if they feel their loved one is deteriorating and their concerns are not being heard. A rollout of the rule was announced by the NHS this month, with 143 hospital sites nationally involved in a trial run of the approach. The move has been welcomed by Norwich businessman Marcus Piercy, whose father Michael died in February while being treated at the Norfolk and Norwich. Mr. Piercy, an 85-year-old retired offshore worker from Postwick, had been admitted for a routine operation, but deteriorated after developing sepsis during his recovery and died on February the 22nd of multiple organ failure. Mr. Piercy said he felt Martha's Rule would have made a huge difference if it was in effect while his father was being treated. He said, "Martha's Rule is going to be a massive game changer for people. I feel like I'm quite a confident person when it comes to making my voice heard, but I was just lost at the time and had no real idea where to turn. This will make a huge difference, as I think if I had known about it, I would have had the strength to call for it." Professor Sir Stephen Powis, NHS's National Medical Director, has said the policy will represent one of the most important changes to patient care in years. The rollout will make a critical care outreach team available 24/7 for NHS trusts, families, carers and patient advocates.
St Mary Magdalene Church is hosting its fourth annual Summer on the Mag event on Magdalene Square from 1pm to 5pm on Saturday, June the 8th. The free event will feature roving street artists, inflatables and rides, refreshments and music, with a full programme of acts performing on a stage outside the church. Traditional entertainment will be provided by Punch and Judy, and local performers will be showcased from the freshly grated live stage. There will also be an all-comers Just for Fun dog show, with categories including Waggiest Tail, Best Trick and Junior Handler. Reverend Matthew Price said, "We want to provide a fun, low-cost afternoon for the entire community so that we can come together celebrating all that is good. We've sought to draw together local businesses, community groups and charities to make the afternoon the best it can be." The afternoon will be officially opened by the Right Reverend Ian Bishop, the Bishop of Thetford, at 1pm. Headline performer Kuiper will take to the stage at 2pm and the dog show will begin at 2:30pm. And anyone wanting to enter their dog in the show should turn up at the dog arena at that time. Throughout the afternoon, street performers, including Bugs, which are two lime green, four-legged, horned bugs, will stalk about the crowd, chirruping in a secret language and investigating the human race. Reverend Price continued, "It's been exciting to see Summer on the Mag grow as an event over the last few years, and we're looking forward to another brilliant afternoon. At the heart of our mission as a church is to be a presence for good in our community. Summer on the Mag is a key part of us living out that mission. Let's hope they get some sunshine." Now, as I mentioned earlier, we have a couple of items other than the news we've just read for you. Alison, since we last recorded, you've been doing some research, I believe.
Yes.
What have you been finding out?
I've been finding out about local place names.
Please tell us.
Living in Norfolk, it's impossible not to be fascinated by the local place names. With listeners living in Great Yarmouth or in the numerous villages surrounding the town, here's some information about how those places came by their names, with apologies to any village that has been left out. Well, firstly, what about Norfolk itself? Norfolk refers to the northern people, presumably those in the north of East Anglia, in contrast to Suffolk, the southern people or folk. And before we go any further, this area was an Anglo-Saxon kingdom of the East Angles, people who came from Anglia in what is now part of North Germany. Norfolk was first mentioned in Anglo-Saxon chronicles in 1043, so it's been on the map for almost 1,000 years. The majority of our local place names seem to derive from their geographical locations. For example, Norwich means a settlement in the north, whilst Great Yarmouth, unsurprisingly, is at the mouth of the River Yare. Some names, though, are a little less obvious. Bradwell means a broad or wide stream or spring, whilst Belton was a farm settlement by a funeral pyre, or maybe by a glade, and Acle means a clearing in an oak wood. Halvergate may come from an Old English, meaning land for which half a heriot is due, and a heriot was a feudal duty that had to be paid to a lord on the death of a tenant, and it could have consisted of a live animal or even military equipment that the tenant had borrowed. Other villages are closely linked with farming, such as Winterton, which meant a winter farmstead or village by the sea, of course, contrasting with nearby Somerton, a summer enclosure. Animals were, of course, moved between winter and summer pastures. Reedham, unsurprisingly, was Old English for a homestead by the reeds. Meanwhile, Horsey means horse island, maybe a grazing area for horses. The name suggests, as we know, that the area was surrounded by water. There were also the nearby islands of East and West Flegg, and the fortification of Flegg, known today as Fleggborough. Whilst Martham means a village or area of land surrounded by water or marsh with martens or weasels. One of the striking things about place names in this area is the number of villages which end with the letters BY. This suffix was apparently a Norse word which basically meant farm. The Vikings, who came over from Denmark, are recorded as having defeated English armies as early as the year 870, so they lived in this area long before the Anglo-Saxons. We have, for example, Hemsby, that is Hemma's farm, Scrapby or Scrawty's farm, Philby or Philly's farm, and Ormsby or Ormer's farm. Likewise, there is Clipsby or Clipper's farm, and Billockby, which is Bithel Aki's farm, whilst Maltby means Malty's farm or where malt is made, and Thrigby is Thricky's farm. Slightly different are Stokesby, a village with outlying pasture, and Oby, which is strictly speaking called Ashby with Oby. The name suggests a Viking influence, but it's classed as a lost village. Not all our local villages have Viking influences in their names. Caister, for example, means a Roman site next to the sea. It seems that there was a fort for the Roman army and navy in Caister as early as AD 200. Burgh Castle was another Roman fort, built at a similar time and abandoned about 100 years later. Runham may be Old English, meaning a council, which is a run, in a village or a ham, whilst Repswith Bastwick is Bast's specialised farm or strips of land. Galston was Girl's farm or settlement, and Hopton, a farmstead in a small enclosed valley. And there was an actual Gapton Hall, originally known as Gapton Hall with Belton, a large hall built on the site of a medieval manor house, which was demolished in the mid-20th century. How different from what it is today. Finally, an interesting one is Potter Higham. Originally, it was just called Higham, meaning a homestead with a hedge or with a grating used to catch fish. However, by 1182, pottery was being made in one part of the parish, so it became Higham Potter, but was changed back in the late 18th century. Thinking about the origins of our local place names gives us an idea of just how long people have been living in this area. What I found was interesting is that few places make reference to the sea. Obviously, agriculture and the ability to grow crops and produce food was the main preoccupation for our erstwhile local residents.
That's fascinating. Isn't it interesting as well when you listen about the Anglo-Saxon names, as you broke them down there, you can actually hear those names with the Potter of Higham, with Belton, Bradwell, Broadwater. Yet the Roman names, the Caister, is quite obscure.
Yes, I think our language is very much based on Anglo-Saxon.
Well, an anonymous orchestra and choir there with Dvořák's Going Home. Or should that be Going Homeless? More news now. Alison will be back a bit later, but first, Andrew is flying solo.
A man who shared explicit images of a woman without her consent, including when she was a child, has been sentenced. Lewis Simpson, 26, of Hertford Way in Galston, was arrested after sending the photographs to the family of his victim, making her feel suicidal and depressed. Some of the messages contained explicit selfie images taken when she was an adult, but others had been taken when she was under the age of 16. They were sent alongside offensive text messages, and police connected the devices and images to Simpson after detecting his location when a Facebook account was set up to send some of the images which Simpson alone had access to. After being charged, he pleaded guilty to distributing an indecent photograph of a child and disclosing a sexual photograph or film with intent to cause distress between November the 13th, 2020 and January 22nd, 2021. At his sentencing in Norwich Crown Court on May the 21st, he was given a 12-month court order required to undertake a relationship building course, fined £100 and placed on the sex offenders register for 5 years. In court, Simpson's victim said that the images being sent had caused shame and an impact on her family relationships, making her feel suicidal and depressed. PC Dave Moran said, "These types of cases can have a real impact on the victim and be incredibly harmful. We will pursue these kinds of offences in order to make sure there is some kind of justice done on behalf of the victim who was brave to come forward." County council leaders are pledging to press ahead with a crunch vote on Norfolk's multi-million pound devolution deal, despite the general election throwing its future into question. Norfolk County Council is due to meet on July the 23rd to vote on whether to change its governance so the public can vote for a directly elected leader, a key component of the £600 million deal offered by the government. But with Prime Minister Rishi Sunak calling a general election for July the 4th, it is not clear whether a new government, of whatever hue, would still offer the same devolution deal which Conservatives at County Hall have been keen to embrace. Local Government Secretary Michael Gove, who has been involved in talks over that deal, has announced he is standing down, while it is not known whether an incoming Labour government will push ahead with such deals. However, a County Council spokesperson said, "We are in regular contact with the Department of Levelling Up, and we remain confident our devolution deal will be able to proceed as planned, subject to the vote at full council in July." But Brian Watkins, leader of the opposition Liberal Democrat group, was not convinced the deal would end up going ahead. He said, "There's lots of ifs and buts and maybes. You would think maybe there could be some degree of consensus that, even if there were a change of government, Norfolk needs to proceed with the deal. But there's quite a bit of doubt and uncertainty about what will happen." The idea of a county deal, which would see a transfer of power from Whitehall to Norfolk County Council, was agreed in principle in December 2022. And that deal includes an investment fund of £20 million a year for 30 years, control of the £12 million budget for adult education, and £7 million for brownfield development. While it does not come with a mayor or the creation of a new tier of government known as a combined authority, as has happened with devolution in areas such as Manchester and Liverpool, it would see the public vote for a directly elected leader of Norfolk County Council. The first election of such a leader had been due to take place this month, but the council previously agreed to postpone it until May next year. County Hall leader Kay Mason Billig previously said the deal would give the county, quote, "a seat at the top table," and warned Norfolk could not afford to be left in the wilderness. However, the deal has been criticised, including by Lord Fuller, during his time as Conservative leader of South Norfolk Council. And staying with county news, work to dual sections of the A47 can now begin following a long-running court battle, and we've reported on this quite a few times. This is after an environmental campaigner lost his final attempt to block the schemes. The UK Supreme Court has turned down former Green City and County Councillor Dr. Andrew Boswell's application for his legal challenge over the Norfolk schemes to be heard there. So it means work to dual sections on the A47 between North Tuddenham and Easton, and from Blowfield to North Burlingham, can now start. Officials at National Highways, the government company responsible for the road, had been forced to pause work on the projects along with the revamp of Thickthorn Roundabout on the edge of Norwich because of this long-running court battle. They said Dr. Boswell's challenge had delayed the projects by 20 months and added tens of millions of pounds to their costs due to soaring inflation. Dr. Boswell had already seen his crowd-funded case thrown out by the High Court and the Court of Appeal, where judges described it as having no logical basis and an air of complete unreality. But he sought permission to take his argument that the government acted unlawfully in approving the schemes because it did not properly consider the cumulative environmental impacts to the Supreme Court. Now, the Supreme Court, the highest court in the land, rejected this case, meaning Dr. Boswell now has no further legal avenues to explore. He said, "I'm disappointed with this decision, but I'm much more disappointed for our children and grandchildren who will have to live with a rapidly destabilising climate. When transport creates more carbon pollution than anything else we do, it is not okay to build four road schemes together in Norfolk and not even attempt to assess the combined climate damage. Bad decisions today mean dire consequences tomorrow. To reduce the scale of future damages, the new government must make better decisions on all plans involving impacts on the climate." Matthew McFeely, solicitor at Richard Buxton Solicitors, who represented Dr. Boswell, said, "This was an important case which sought to clarify the scope of the legal requirements to assess the climate impact of related projects. Cumulative assessment requirements appear to have very little bite after the Supreme Court's decision. It will be a question for government whether the current approach is fit for purpose going forward." Dr. Boswell had come under political pressure to drop his legal challenge, and MPs and councillors had urged him to abandon his lost cause, which they said was needlessly costing taxpayers money. He was branded a hypocrite by Mid-Norfolk Conservative MP George Freeman, whose constituency includes a long stretch of the A47. After it emerged, the former UEA academic drove a carbon-emitting petrol car rather than an electric vehicle. Amid uncertainty over the legal case, National Highways had been restricted to what work it could do on both A47 schemes. National Highways was restricted to activities such as archaeological studies and rerouting utilities such as water and electricity. Locally now, and preliminary work for 665 homes has started at a controversial new housing estate in Caister. Houses at Persimmon Homes Development at Nova Scotia Farm on Jack Chase Way are also being advertised under a new name. The access road to the new housing estate has been built with heavy machinery on site and fencing surrounding the perimeter. The site, previously known as Magnolia Gardens, is now believed to be called Mulberry Park. Information on the developer's website reads, "Mulberry Park presents a collection of new homes in Norfolk, just minutes from golden sandy beaches. Enjoying a peaceful edge of village setting, Mulberry Park is ideally positioned to make the most of local shops, schools and other services, handy transport routes to Norwich and of course the stunning coastal landscape." The website also includes details of home properties stating, "There's something for everyone. The homes to be built range from two-bedroom starter homes to five-bedroom family homes." The housing estate has received criticism since plans were first released in 2021. Around that time, people in the area strongly criticised the project and its possible effect on roads, services and the loss of hedgerows and trees. So, how would you like to see Great Yarmouth improve? A series of workshops and an online survey have been launched so people can have their say on improvements across the borough for the next 5 years. Great Yarmouth Borough Council wants to find out what people's priorities are and what matters to those who live, work, study, create, visit and do business locally. An online survey has been launched so people can share their thoughts about a variety of issues, including attracting further investment and driving economic regeneration, recovery and growth. Several drop-in sessions across Yarmouth and Goulston have also been announced. Once feedback has been analysed, the Council will produce a plan setting out its vision and priorities aligned to themes of safety and security, high streets, heritage and regeneration, and transport and connectivity. This plan will sit alongside and build on the work that is underway or has been completed through successful funding programmes for the borough, such as its Town Deal, Future High Streets Fund and the Levelling Up Fund. Natasha Hayes, Executive Director of Place, said the Council aims to remain focused on strategies that, quote, will help us make a significant difference in people's lives as well as raising aspirations and driving economic development across the borough. The Council's regeneration strategy has seen multi-million pound projects already completed, such as the Seafront's £26 million Marina Centre and the Town Centre's new market building. Other major projects informed by Our Place is Your Stage include the new £17 million Library and Learning Hub in the former Palmer's Department Store, the Winter Gardens redevelopment and the Operation and Maintenance Campus in South Deans. Now, this online survey is open until Friday, June the 21st, and can be found at, here we go, surveys.great-yarmouth.gov.uk/community-engagement-survey. A drug dealer was back selling cannabis just months after being spared jail for involvement in a cocaine operation. Shannon O'Donoghue, aged 26, was given a suspended sentence in September 2021 for her involvement with a County Lines gang which sold £140,000 worth of heroin and crack cocaine in Great Yarmouth. However, she was arrested again following an investigation into cannabis dealing, centred on an off-licence shop, sparked by a tip-off to police in January 2022. Norwich Crown Court was told, following the arrest of a shop worker, analysis of text messages linked to known phone numbers had shown she was involved. Samantha Lowther, prosecuting, said, among the messages aimed at would-be customers was one stating, bank holiday deals, grab them while they last. One text had queried, is all the weed gone? While another message said, you need to get customers ASAP, lol. O'Donoghue of North Quay in Great Yarmouth pleaded guilty to being concerned in the supply of Class B drugs. Daniel O'Donovan, mitigating, said, she is still a relatively young woman and she's before the court for offences almost 2 years ago. She said her involvement in the County Lines operation had been the result of a toxic relationship. Joshua Luca, her partner at the time, was jailed for 8 years. While O'Donoghue worked to cut the drugs and recruit and manage street-level dealers, many of whom were drawn from among the town's addicts. Miss O'Donovan said, she is a changed woman now. She had rid herself of drug dealing, drug contacts and people associated with drugs. Recorder John Hardy said further drugs offences just months into a suspended sentence would ordinarily be enough to see an immediate custodial sentence. But sentencing her to an 18-month community order with a requirement to do up to 50 rehabilitation days, he added, I accept you have made improvements to your lifestyle. The town will remember the D-Day landings with its 80th anniversary event. On June the 6th, St George's Park in Great Yarmouth is hosting the ceremony where the public can honour the 160,000 Allied troops who landed on the Normandy beaches in 1944. The annual event, hosted by Great Yarmouth Borough Council, Great Yarmouth Minster and the Royal British Legion, will start at 6 p.m. with arrivals from 5:50 p.m. The Borough Mayor, Councillor Paula Waters Bunn, will lay a wreath at the War Memorial, followed by members of the Royal British Legion. The service will be marked by readings, prayers, hymns and a 2-minute silence led by Reverend Canon Simon Ward, with participation from the Mayor's Chaplain, Father Alvin Iber. Councillor Waters Bunn said, "The D-Day service is an opportunity for the whole community to honour and remember those who sacrificed so much during the Second World War. We hope as many people as possible are able to attend the service to mark this important anniversary." After the service, the Great Yarmouth Beacon in Anchor Gardens will be lit at 9:15 p.m. and there will also be a display of memorabilia in Great Yarmouth Minster to mark the anniversary. If people have anything they would like to contribute to the display, they are asked to email mayor@great-yarmouth.gov.uk. Now, not to be confused with a new theme park attraction, a huge rig has docked in the town and could be there for up to 90 days. Prospector 1, a jack-up rig, has appeared in Great Yarmouth, towering over the town and reportedly viewable from as far away as Lowestoft. Jack-up rigs are floating drilling rigs with movable legs that can elevate when the rig relocates from one site to another. They are mostly commonly used when drilling oil from deep-sea reservoirs. According to FishSafe, a website that provides information about oil and gas-related surface and subsea structures in deep-sea waters, Prospector 1 will be docked in the town for approximately 90 days and will be used by Dutch company One Dias for accommodation and completing plugging and abandoning of the wells on the Sean Romeo platform. The rig was towed to Great Yarmouth by three tugs, and a dedicated emergency response and rescue vessel will guard a 500-metre safety zone around the towering structure. Prospector 1 was built in 2013 and is owned by Bor Drilling and was constructed at Dalian Shipbuilding Industry in China. It's able to accommodate up to 140 people and has a maximum drilling depth of 35,000 feet and a water depth of 400 feet. Bor Drilling, an international drilling contractor incorporated in Bermuda in 2016, owns and operates jack-up rigs providing drilling services to oil and gas exploration and production industry. In April, the company announced new contract commitments for three of its premium jack-up rigs, including Prospector 1, for a total of 820 days and $158 million in contract revenue. Eye-watering figures. But never mind striking oil, one lucky person has struck gold onshore. A mystery man couldn't believe his luck after winning a £113,000 jackpot at a seafront casino. He scooped the cash prize at Grosvenor Casino in Great Yarmouth after a tense game of three-card poker. The game saw the player go head-to-head with the dealer in several betting rounds to win an increase in jackpot. And, thanks to a royal flush of hearts, the winner took home a staggering £113,542 at, quote, one of the luckiest Grosvenor casinos in the UK. The lucky player, who wishes to remain anonymous, is still deciding on what to do with his lucrative win. Gemma Allen, general manager at Grosvenor Casino in Great Yarmouth, said, "A huge congratulations to our lucky winner from everyone at the casino. It was truly a pulsating game and a moment our winner will most likely never forget. It's great to see that our casino was able to produce another huge win and continue to be one of the luckiest Grosvenor casino venues in the UK." I've been back again to my trusty Dan Snow book, and with June upon us, there was only really one day in history that I could pick up on, and that's the 6th of June. It was the largest fleet ever gathered. Veterans say, with forgivable exaggeration, that they could have walked across the Solent to the Isle of Wight from deck to deck. There were 7,000 vessels from 8 different navies that would carry soldiers to the coast of occupied Europe, where in the early hours of June the 6th in 1944, they would begin the job of driving Hitler's forces out of France. It is, of course, known simply as D-Day. The D is to emphasise that particular day, just as the army would always say an assault began at H hour. Nothing was left to chance. D-Day followed years of meticulous preparation. The right moon and tidal conditions were selected, The beaches were investigated by special forces who brought back soil samples. The Germans had been bombarded with false intelligence. Aerial photography had identified nearly every German position. Tanks had been designed that would float to the beaches and then deploy a terrifying array of specialist weaponry. Airborne troops were going to drop inland. The French resistance was mobilised. British bombers dropped tin foil and dummy parachutists to confuse the Germans. Even the custodians of the Bayeux Tapestry, that priceless record of another cross-channel invasion, had been tipped off and it was safely stored away from the fighting. At dawn on the 6th, American, British, Canadian and other troops stormed ashore. On some beaches, after a short, sharp initial battle, the Allies quickly pushed inland. On one beach, codenamed Omaha, American infantrymen found themselves pinned down without tanks. Wave after wave of men were disgorged from landing craft, only to be annihilated by machine gun fire. Thousands were killed or wounded as they waded ashore in deep, cold water. By the end of the day, the Allies had landed more than 150,000 men in France, a stunning achievement. The Germans rushed troops to the beachhead, and what followed was a battle for Normandy that would rival the first World War battles in its intensity and cost. D-Day was just the beginning.
Boys are home again, all over the world. And rain or snow is all that may fall from the skies above. A kiss won't mean goodbye, but hello to love. Again, all over the world, and the ships will sail again, all over the world. Then we'll have time for things like wedding rings and free hearts. When the lights go on again, all over the world.
Vera, and When the Lights Go On Again. Right, It's time to get fully up to date with the rest of this week's local news with Andrew and Alison.
Two people have been prosecuted following complaints about drug-related antisocial behaviour. There were repeated reports of disruption caused by the pair in Goulston and Martham. The council worked with Norfolk Constabulary in attempts to change their behaviour, but they proved unsuccessful, and the two of them appeared at Great Yarmouth Magistrates Court. An antisocial behaviour injunction was given to Amanda Hutchinson, aged 58, of Magnolia Green, Goulston, and she was also ordered to pay £716.25. Ian McKenzie, 58, of Grove Close, Martham, was also handed an injunction, and his costs are to be decided later. The injunctions were granted under the Antisocial Behaviour Crime and Policing Act 2014 and last for a year. The orders forbid Hutchinson and McKenzie, members of their household and visitors, from using, being in possession of, or being under the influence of unlawful drugs, or allowing the smell of drugs to disperse from their homes and into communal areas or other properties. A breach of the orders could result in a prison sentence of up to 2 years and an unlimited fine. A spokesman for Great Yarmouth Borough Council said, "Taking court action where necessary demonstrates the council's determination to tackle antisocial behaviour which affects the community. The council will always act swiftly and robustly to protect the wider community when crimes are committed." A holiday park has lost its battle to overturn its failed bid to get permission for people to have caravans as their permanent homes. Barham Leisure Limited, which operates the Pampas Lodge site in Haddiscoe near Beccles, hoped to remove a condition that restricts the use of its static caravans for holidays only. But the bid was met with strong backlash from locals, who complained it would lead to too much traffic and that it would be a further burden on the limited services in the small village. The Broads Authority received several letters of objections, with people also worrying about the flood risk to people living in the caravans. It led the authority to decide to refuse the application due to the site being unsuitable and that the plans would, quote, result in the loss of holiday accommodation within the Broads network, which would damage local tourism. However, the applicant urged that the change in use of the statics would provide significant economic and social benefits, as the people living in the permanently occupied caravans will spend and work locally. The owners of the holiday park called for a rethink and appealed to the planning inspectorate to overturn the decision. Diane Barham, for the owners, said that the demand for its caravans as holiday homes had fallen to almost zero, leaving them struggling amidst the declining tourist trade. She said there is no time restriction on how long the static caravans can be occupied. Speaking about the flood risk, she said that they already had permission for people to use the caravans as holiday homes 365 days a year. She argued this meant that changing the use of the properties to a permanent residence would not increase the risk of flooding, as it was already there. However, the inspector sided with the Broads Authority and villagers, ruling that it was not a suitable location for a residential development due to, quote, poor access to service and facilities. In addition, they worried people would be in danger of being flooded, putting future homes at unacceptable risk. They also agreed that it could harm the local tourist economy.
An 18-year-old woman from Goulston has achieved one of her life's dreams as she joins Russell's International Circus. The travelling extravaganza, headquartered in Downham Market, has welcomed aerial silk performer Elise White, who will debut at their Great Yarmouth Racecourse Spectacular. Miss White, who has been honing her skills in silk since 2016, said she was ecstatic about the opportunity to follow her dreams. "I am really excited. It's a dream come true," she said. "All these years of practicing and I'm finally going to be a part of Russell's International Circus." Circus director and ringmaster Rusty Russell added, "We see so much potential and passion in Elise. We are certain she will shine and it will be a joy for the audience to witness her incredible performance." Russell's International Circus will be appearing at the racecourse in Great Yarmouth from May 29th until June 2nd with daily performances. This year's show promises to be a mesmerising experience, showcasing an international cast of performers in an all-new production. Audiences can expect awe-inspiring acrobats, talented jugglers, and a thrilling appearance from the mighty Kong in the Amazon Jungle Spectacular.
Council leaders are pinning their hopes that a taxed windfall from new charges on second homes could help plug a multi-million pound gap and prevent them having to make cuts. Norfolk County Council anticipates its coffers will be boosted by millions of pounds through extra charges on properties which are not principal residences. The county's district councils, except Breckland, Broadland and South Norfolk, intend to bring in the new charge from next April, which would double what owners of second homes pay. Places such as Burnham Market, Hunstanton, Brancaster, Wells and Blakeney are among Norfolk's second homes hotspots. Conservative-led County Hall, which is planning a 2.99% increase in its share of the council tax next year, would benefit hugely from an injection of extra cash as it grapples to find £44 million worth of cuts and savings in 2025-26. That's on top of the £42 million agreed this year. About three quarters of council tax cash goes to the county council, with the rest going to the districts, the police and crime commissioner, and town or parish councils. County Hall has said it's too early to put a figure on how much extra it would generate, but in a report, officers stated it could bring in, quote, significant additional income. The issue of second homes has become increasingly contentious in Norfolk, with many locals claiming they're harming communities. The new tax is intended to address these concerns, but has led to fears that some popular areas will be seen as cash cow villages. The consequences of the charge on second homes was discussed at the Council's Cross-Party Scrutiny Committee, where Liberal Democrat Chairman Dan Roper, also a Broadland District Councillor, said, "Clearly, the officers would like us to get this extra money, but there is a political dimension to it. Ultimately, it does involve charging some people more money in council tax, and that is something for politicians to decide about." Jane Janes, Cabinet Member for Corporate Services and Innovation, said she did not want to prejudge what district councils did, but acknowledged there were pros and cons. Conservative Councillor Brian Long, also a West Norfolk councillor, which is introducing the extra charge, said many second homes may, quote, suddenly become fully available Airbnbs, avoiding both council tax and business rates. After the meeting, Steve Morphew, leader of the Labour Group at County Hall, said, "If it is an important policy for the districts, then that's all well and good. But the county council should not be relying on that when planning essential services for the people of Norfolk."
An epidemic of retail crime saw a record number of shoplifting offences in Norfolk last year. Stores and small shop owners and staff are finding themselves on the front line of both increasingly brazen gangs and persistent repeat offenders. Unions and retail groups said urgent action was needed to address the, quote, concerning trend to protect employees and customers. Office for National Statistics figures show there were 4,803 shoplifting offences recorded by Norfolk Constabulary in 2023. It was up 30% from 3,686 offences in 2022, and the highest since comparable records began in 2003. James Lohman of the Association of Convenience Stores said the figures were likely to only represent a, quote, fraction of the true picture on shop theft, as the vast majority end up not being reported. Earlier this year, a shoplifting gang responsible for an astonishing crime spree covering hundreds of miles and 47 branches of the same supermarket chain were jailed after being caught in Norfolk. The group used foil-lined bags to walk off with at least £65,000 worth of goods from Morrison's outlets. Another operation saw thousands of pounds worth of beauty products during a series of shop raids across the county. While a serial shoplifter was jailed this month after attacking security staff and another shop thief, with dozens of previous offences and banned from shops across the county, was sent to prison for assaulting two store workers in Norwich. The East of England Co-op said it had seen the highest ever levels of shoplifting last year, with dozens of shop workers facing abuse from criminals every day. Matt Hood, Co-op's Managing Director of Food Retail, said repeat prolific offenders and criminal gangs are driving the spike in shop crime. The group has invested in body cameras for staff and CCTV, and has also been trialling security measures, including secure kiosks, locked doors on high-value products, dummy packaging and automated CCTV. Despite the extensive measures, the reality is that every day four of our colleagues will be attacked and up to a further 116 will be seriously abused, he added. Paddy Lillis of Shop Workers Union Usdaw said, "Shoplifting is not a victimless crime. Theft from shops has long been a major flashpoint for violence and abuse against shop staff. Having to deal with repeated and persistent shoplifters can cause issues beyond the theft itself, like anxiety, fear, and in some cases, physical harm to retail workers. This increase in shoplifting across the region is further evidence that we are facing an epidemic of retail crime, which is hugely concerning."
Staying with crime, a man doused people in petrol before being assaulted in the centre of Great Yarmouth, police have said. The man, who is in his 40s, was taken to hospital by air ambulance after he was reported to have been assaulted on Regent Road at around 6 a.m. on Monday. Minutes before, police received reports that the man had forced his way into a home on Middlemarket Road and doused those inside with petrol before running away. The man has since been arrested on suspicion of attempted arson and endangering life, and he remains in a stable condition in hospital. Following the reports of the Regent Road assault, a man, also in his 40s, was arrested nearby. He was taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning, and subsequently the man, Carl Pammon, aged 40 and of no fixed abode, has been charged with attempted grievous bodily harm. He's been remanded to appear at Norwich Magistrates Court on Wednesday. A spokesman for Norfolk Constabulary said, "Police were called to Middlemarket Road in Great Yarmouth at around 5:55 a.m. on Monday, May the 27th, to reports a man had forced his way into a property and doused those inside with petrol before running off. Moments after this incident, officers received another call that a male had been assaulted in Regent Road. The victim of the assault, a man aged in his 40s, was taken by air ambulance to hospital with serious injuries. Paramedic equipment was left inside a police cordon beside Pound Stretcher on Monday morning, and forensic teams stayed outside the Middlemarket Road property throughout the day. Officers remain with the man suspected of arson, and he will be taken to Great Yarmouth Police Investigation Centre for questioning once discharged from hospital. Three females and one male who were inside the Middlemarket Road property were checked over by ambulance crew but were not taken to hospital. Inquiries are continuing.
Well, that's it for this week's edition, which is copyright 2024 of the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association. News content is adapted mainly from the Great Yarmouth Mercury. However, the Great Yarmouth and District Talking Newspaper Association accept responsibility for editorial decisions made for this recording. Don't forget, you can contact us from our website at grapevinegy.org if you have any queries over our service. Your newsreader next week will be Desney, so we hope for your company then for much more of your local news. In the meantime, from all of us at Grapevine, stay safe and well, and bye for now.